Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Welcome to the Syrupcast, Mobile Syrup's Canadian tech-focused podcast. I'm Patrick O'Rourke and Brad Bennett, a man who refers to himself as the bad boy of tech, but that I call Mobile Syrup's teen correspondent, is once again not across the table from me. He's on the internet. I'm seeing his lovely face over Google Meet this time because we're still sheltering in place because of COVID-19. How are you doing, Brad?
I'm doing good. I've taken my sheltering to the next level, and I'm actually coming to you from a Russian submarine off of the Pacific coast. And it's nice. Internet speeds are surprisingly fast.
How's the Wi-Fi at your depth currently?
I wish I knew a numerical value to say for depth that would make sense, but the Wi-Fi is 120 megabits per second, megabytes.
Just say you're 1,000 leagues under the sea or something.
Yeah, I'm that author.
And we also have John Lamont here with us today. How are you doing, John?
I am doing well, all things considered, joining in from my basement where I have not seen the sun in weeks.
You're looking very pale. I can totally tell you haven't been outside.
Yeah, the outdoors, it's a scary place. I prefer the internet, not the outer net.
I hear there's murder hornets out there.
Yes, I think those are only in BC though. So
they're coming okay. Here.
They're coming.
They're hitching a train to Ontario.
Yeah, on their way. Summer's coming. The warm weather.
So we're not here to talk about murder hornets or COVID-19. Thankfully, we're talking about hardware this week as well as software. I'm handing over the reins of the podcast to Brad again this week against my better judgment, because he came up with the interesting idea to do sort of a PC Mac head-to-head, given various Surface devices and new MacBook laptops have launched over the last couple of weeks. So I'll throw it over to him to intro what we're going to be talking about this week.
Yeah, it's a classic Mac versus PC showdown. That's Patrick, he's a Mac, and that's John, he's a PC. And yeah, basically these two guys are kind of within our office known as the Mac and PC guys, and they're representing their houses accordingly. And yeah, we're going to go through a few topics like hardware and software design, and then a few other things like smartphone integration, and just kind of see like if we can determine between the three of us who have used all the ecosystems but generally fall more towards one than the other, and see if maybe we can have our opinions swayed with all the new hardware coming out. We thought that would be timely.
Sick. Do you want to hit the hottest news of the week super quick?
Yes. So first up on hottest news of the week, Google has sort of officially announced that Google Play Music is dying, I guess, being closed down. We knew this was coming for a long time, but now Google's made a tool for transferring over your listening data, your music, your playlist, your cloud save songs over from Google Play Music to YouTube Music. There's also a tool for transferring your podcasts from Google Play Music to Google's new podcasting app. Both these seem to work well, but the tool is rolling out in stages, and you'll see it pop up on the podcast app or the YouTube Music app.
Why would I ever subscribe to YouTube Music if I already have Spotify? Or I don't like Apple Music for a variety of reasons that I won't get into, but what does YouTube Music offer, like anything that those other platforms don't?
Yeah, it sort of has two unique features, one being very unique, one not so unique. The first one is that it sort of has access to YouTube Music videos or just music that's on YouTube, you know, chill beats to study / workout to, that video is on YouTube Music. I have an artist that I like called Tyler Childers, and some of the songs that I like by him I can only find on YouTube, but I can save them in my playlist through YouTube Music. So that way you kind of have access to those songs in a roundabout way. And then the other thing...
That's cool.
Yeah, it is actually really cool, and it gives you access to a lot more songs that you can't find on other platforms. It's sort of a hidden gem. And then the other thing is that it sort of has a cloud locker interface, so you can upload songs from or on a computer and then access them on your phones because they're saved in the cloud, in the YouTube Music cloud. And then you can, I believe, use those songs and put them into playlists with just regular songs that you pay for your YouTube streaming music subscription, giving you like a wide mix of music that maybe you've made with songs that you like, as well as YouTube videos. So it has sort of a deeper pool to pull from.
Yeah, and that, cool. That cloud save was that was a Google Play Music feature, was it not?
Yeah, it was. That was one of the big things people were waiting for, to switch from Google Play Music to YouTube Music. I think it was like 2 or 3 months ago that they sort of added it, and it's here now. So I haven't really used it and went in depth to see how much it works. I used to use the Google Play one a lot, but I have faith that it probably acts very similar.
Yeah, I was,
as a Spotify loyalist, I don't care.
Yeah,
yeah. When Play Music first launched, I was big into that cloud music thing because I didn't want to pay for a subscription, so I just uploaded all my own songs. But now that I pay for a subscription, I don't find that feature super necessary.
When Play Music first launched, I uploaded roughly 30 gigs of music. I won't tell you how I procured that music, but I uploaded 30 gigs from my like iPod Classic directly.
Yeah.
And that was pretty cool, but then like I got into Spotify and I just had no interest in going back and listening to all those songs that I already had access to on a streaming platform that has it all in the cloud.
I think the only other big like cloud system that not a lot of people know about is Apple Music. It has this thing called iTunes Match, and I don't even know if it's called that anymore, and I might be leading people towards something that doesn't exist under that name, but I'm almost 99% sure that it does exist under some way. But you pay like $30 a year, and then any music in your Apple Music app, used to be iTunes app, on your computer would upload to the cloud, like Google Play Music. And I used to use that all the time, but I recently stopped paying for it. That's why I know that it's still around some.
It still exists. Subscribe. I Googled iTunes Match, and it says subscribe to iTunes Match.
Yeah. So you pay $30, I think, if that's still the price, and you get that functionality on Apple Music as well. But you have to pay $30 a year for it. Should I move on?
Yeah, keep going.
Yeah.
All right. The next thing is actually Apple related again, as we trail off on that, but it's AirPods Studios, which might be a new wireless headset from Apple that's more of an over-ear design like Bose noise-canceling 700s or Beats Studios, but under Apple's AirPods branding and featuring like magnetic components that sort of customize the fit, I guess.
I'm interested in these because I like the idea of changing the fit of headphones. Even at home, like I wear headphones pretty much all day, so any way to make that experience more comfortable would be great. Mm-hmm. I do question the logic of calling them AirPods Studio, because inherently if they're over-ear headphones, they're not really pods that you're putting in your ear. Like, I know this is a little bit of semantics here, but it seems strange in a way. But from a marketing perspective, I totally get it, because AirPods are some of the most popular headphones ever released, right? Like, they're instantly recognizable. Everybody knows the name. So if you're releasing new headphones, you're not going to call them like the Apple Buds or something like that. You're going to stick with that.
That's
what
I was going to say. Like, on the count of three, can we all think of a new name that might be better suited than AirPods Studio?
Okay, let's do it.
All right, take 3 seconds. I think I just want to go with like Apple headphones, or like Apple noise canceling headphones, maybe?
Airphones.
Whoa.
Ooh, you got it. I want them to call them the iHeadphones. It's a throwback.
The MacPhones. I just think that Apple's putting a lot of things into like the Apple branding vertical, so that makes the most sense for it to go next. Although I don't know if that will ever extend to hardware beyond Apple Pencil. Actually, Apple Pencil, so maybe. But then again,
I'm hyped for these. Like, I think they're going to be revealed during Apple's All Digital WWDC in June.
Some amazing commercials, some dude or person walking down the street, AirPods Pro in, bop, bop, bop. I'm having the great life. Open door into darkness. Exposure matches. It's a studio. Pulls the big headphones out of the darkness, puts them on, starts mixing music like we all do every day. And I know that that's going to come. I think I just outlined the commercial.
Johnny Ive's going to narrate it too. He's going to do a contract appearance to narrate it.
Yeah. All right. Moving on to the next and final piece of the hottest news this week so far. The Pixel 4a is tipped to come out in early June. Although we don't know. It's just a rumor. But leading out of that, it seems like Mark Lavoie, the head of the camera sort of team at Google's Pixel department has left. And yeah, that's pretty big. We don't think it'll impact the Pixel 4a, but going forward, that seems like a pretty key component to the Google Pixel dominance abandoning ship.
Yeah, and there was something connected with that about Rick Osterloh. I probably butchered that, but who's the head of Pixel in the whole Pixel 4 battery situation, with the battery life not being great and the issues all connected into that. So things aren't looking super great for the Pixel ship right now. But
yeah, they got hit with sort of a storm of bad news today, and it was worse than we would have expected. We don't know how much it will affect the team in the future, but none of it was good at all.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Are you guys ready for the showdown then?
Yeah, let's hit ready.
But yeah, so I guess the first thing we should talk about is hardware design. And so for this, we'll keep it just to the Mac laptops and the Surface laptop tablet computers. Although we won't go into other Windows devices. We'll just mention that at the end because we all know that that's there. But for the purpose of the debate, I think it's just MacBook Pros, MacBook Airs, MacBooks versus Surface laptops and Surface Books and Surface Goes. You ready? Who wants to go first to defend why their computer has the best hardware design?
The best hardware design. I can start it off, I guess. I have always, I think part of what attracted me to Mac laptops, even just to begin with, is the fact that they're some of the best hardware design out there. They're super durable. They have this like aluminum, I believe it's aluminum, right? That they're made out of. Someone's going to correct me and tell me.
It is.
I'm pretty sure it's aluminum. This aluminum unibody design.
Aluminium.
That at one point was like leagues ahead of anything that Windows was doing. And then the Surface line came along and it slowly caught up with Apple. I would probably say that Surface devices are really, really, really close to being as well made and as good looking as what Apple has with the MacBook Pro and the MacBook Air. They're not quite there, but they're almost there. I like, there's certain things that I don't like about the design. I think I talked about this pretty quite a bit with my 13-inch MacBook Pro review. I wish that Apple reduced the bezels on the 13-inch, like the bezels around the screen. I think that's a bit of an issue, considering that they did the same thing with the 16-inch. It makes sense that they should have done it with the 13-inch. I have a conspiracy theory that they had that planned all along, but that sort of had to be pushed to the wayside because of COVID-19, and then they pushed out this subtle redesign that they were also working on simultaneously. I don't know if that's true. Clearly just me taking a shot in the dark. There's also a possibility they could be waiting to do that sort of more significant aesthetic revamp when the mini LED version launches next year. That's the rumors, that there's going to be like a mini LED screen coming to the MacBook Pro. I don't know. Generally, I just think that Apple's laptops still look slightly better than the Surface devices, but like I said, they're catching up. Like they're pretty close at this point.
Fair enough. John, why do you think the Surfaces look better?
So what I would say about the Surface is that it's kind of like the MacBook, but with a more modern twist or a more modern take.
Mm-hmm.
So what I mean by that is, if you look specifically at the Surface laptop line, they just have these small differences that make them stand out a little bit. So at a base level, I would say that the chassis is basically the same, whether you're getting a MacBook or a Surface. It's still aluminum or magnesium or whatever material it is.
It's a metal
chassis. Some models have the Alcantara like felt pad thing on the keyboard rest, which is really nice. But there's also the metal ones now.
Mm-hmm.
But what sets the chassis apart, at least with the Surface laptops, and something that I think is actually really good, even though it's like subtle and you don't notice it at first, is that the keyboard or the palm rest below the keyboard is actually on an angle. So it starts off really thin and it gets thicker towards the back of the laptop. And that makes it feel really good when you're typing, because it's kind of got this angled form to it. And like when you use a keyboard at a desktop, you usually have the keyboard on an angle a little bit, right? You have the back of the keyboard is up a little bit higher.
Yeah, so it's just like 9 or 10 degrees.
Yeah, it's just little stuff like that, right? Like if you look at a MacBook, it's a little bit more traditional, you know, squared off edges, everything's the same, you know, width and height and stuff like that. Whereas the Surface is a little bit more angular, it's a little bit more shaped, and they're a little bit more experimental. Another area that they do this is the screen's aspect ratio. It's a taller 3x2 instead of the more traditional 16x9, which, you know, might look a little bit weird to some people because it's a lot more square, but from a productivity standpoint, it's so nice to have that extra vertical space, especially on a smaller form factor like a laptop.
Where do all Surface devices have that aspect ratio?
I think so.
Okay.
I'm not, the only one I'm not sure about is the Go 2 or the Surface Go off the top of my head, but I think they all have the 3:2 aspect ratio or something like very similar to that.
Yeah, that's something that I think it would be interesting to see Apple if they ever adopted a wider ratio, because like when you do use a screen with a more squarish ratio, like I think Pat, you have the Pixelbook, right, which has one like that, and I have an Acer Chromebook that has one like a screen like that too, and it's really nice to have all that extra space. Like it's almost like you don't know what to do with it at first, but once you get used to like reading things like that, going to something wider just almost feels thin, even if it's not.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they created the Surface Laptop, and then they have used that same design with very little tweaks and changes. Same thing with the Surface Pro tablets. They came out with the initial Surface Pro design, and it's been more or less the same for the last like several years that they've had it, right?
Since the Pro 3, it's been pretty much the same.
The biggest change we got recently was just a port layout, which I would argue is something that Apple probably wins in terms of. I don't know. Maybe you could argue the opposite way, but it's...
I would say that. I think right now the MacBook, as long as you're getting the one with four USB-C ports, probably is better than the Surface laptop.
Which is what, one USB-C, one Surface charger proprietary port, and one USB-A and a headphone jack?
Yeah, and a headphone jack, yeah.
I kind of appreciate Microsoft mixing in the USB-A, though. Like, I know that doesn't matter that much now. Most of us live in a USB-C world. Mm-hmm. But I think for like the average consumer, making that jump is still going to be pretty jarring. And I know Apple had this vision of pushing that forward when the first MacBook launched back in 2015. And like for us, it doesn't matter. All my stuff for the most part is USB-C. I have like a little adapter on my desk for USB-A. If I need to plug something in, it's there.
Can I say something kind of crazy?
Yeah, go ahead.
Getting USB-C on a desktop computer, super crazy hard to do. Weirdly hard to do, which is...
You'd need a hub, right?
Yeah, like to buy a motherboard with USB-C is expensive.
Oh, a motherboard with USB-C.
Or even a computer with it built in. Like they usually only have like one port. You have to pay like a huge premium for it. It's weird.
Yeah. On that note, I'm working on a story that I can't really say much about, but it involves a motherboard. And that motherboard has like a Thunderbolt 3 adapter, but it's like a PCIe expansion slot, which is super weird. Oh, it's not even part of the typical IO. It's like a whole extra piece that I have to install.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But that's a cool time tangent and something that I think is worth talking about, but we'll get back to it. So far we've kind of established hardware good on both of them. The port selection is different. Maybe Windows has an advantage with that taller display and that tightly curved keyboard or slanted keyboard. Here's a curveball question. Would you rather have the touch bar on the MacBook or the detachable screen of the Surface Book?
The touch bar is useless.
Yeah, that's kind of a no-brainer.
You guys are going definitely. Both are going tablet?
Like, so if you go back into the Mobile Syrup archives, I wrote a story when the touch bar first came on the scene in 2016, talking about how it has a tremendous amount of potential and it could be really cool because it has the ability, the keys, the touch bar itself can adapt to what apps it's using. And I mean, we've seen some of that. There's like Adobe apps that really take advantage of it in cool ways. But beyond that, it's really not very useful. I know if you use Safari, there's things you can do like bookmarks and things like that. But I don't think it's ever really evolved into what Apple wanted it to be. And at this point, it's been like a couple of years. It's not going to. It is what it is because it's Apple. They're not going to get rid of it. It's going to be around for the foreseeable future. And maybe it'll disappear when they do that mini LED display revamp next year if that happens. But like as it stands right now, if this laptop didn't feature the touch bar, I would be fine with it. I never touch it. I don't even know that it's there.
Fair enough. All right. There's point Microsoft, pull off screen.
Actually, just to play devil's advocate, okay, I would probably take the tablet or detachable screen, but on the same token, the touch bar allows you to have, at least in this scenario that we've concocted, the touch bar allows you to have a traditional laptop layout, which means that you would get some hopefully better thermals and stuff like that. Because, you know, one of the issues with the Surface Book, and just to be clear, I have not gone hands-on with the Book 3 yet, so this could be different. But one of the concerns with the Surface Book line is because the main computer is a detachable tablet, they've got to pack the processor and everything in there, with the exception of some extra battery and the GPU, which reside in the keyboard. Everything else is in the tablet part. And so you have to be a lot more cautious with thermals and how you handle packing everything in there to make sure that it all works when you detach it from the keyboard. So from that kind of perspective, if you were going with something a little bit more traditional, you could probably have a little bit more powerful of a laptop.
Here's a question. When I was using a Surface Book, I still have the OG one. I used it probably for 6 months as my main laptop for work and play and whatever. Mm-hmm. I probably detached the tablet part from the keyboard less than 10 times. Do you think there's people out there that really want or need like a laptop style device that has that ability? Because I always feel like it's cool that it's there, but I'm always going to have it connected because I want access to that GPU. Mm-hmm. I don't want to use the integrated one. I don't know. It just seems like, in a way, that form factor is holding the Surface Book back.
Yeah, I think it really depends on what you're trying to do with the laptop. I think the Surface Pro 7, in its tablet-first mindset, is a much better form factor because, you know, it gives you all the benefits of a tablet, and you can attach a keyboard if you want to. And the keyboard is kind of like the second part. Whereas the Book 3 is a little bit more of a unified, you know, more high-end, powerful device. And I feel like the people who, and I could be wrong, but I feel like the people who use something that needs as much power as the Surface Book 3 probably also need a keyboard 90% of the time.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, because that sort of like canceled out what I was going to say, where I was like, well, what if you just kind of kept the keyboard on your desk as like this docking station? But yeah, realistically, you'd be better off with a Surface and an external keyboard then.
And I'm sure there are people who use the Surface Book 3 detached, right? Like if you're an artist, you do a lot of 3D animation or something like that, you're probably detaching it to draw and use your Surface Pen and stuff like that.
But John, all those people own iPad Pros according to Apple.
No, but your name is like Brad and you're in office number 3 and you gotta go down the hall to John in office number 2 and you just wanna be like, oh John, look what I do, and you just pull off your screen and John's on a Mac, so you just wanna like one up him and you just pop in like, check this out, John. He goes, my screen doesn't come off.
Yeah. I think that's cool in theory. I just don't think anyone actually does that.
No,
like, I just really don't.
I agree. That's kinda why I asked the question. It was like the battle of the gimmicks.
It really comes down to your usage. Like for me, the way that I use a computer for work, 90% of what I do requires a keyboard. So like when I use Surface devices with detachable keyboards, I never detach the keyboard because I always need the keyboard. But I know not everybody is in that same use case scenario. And there's lots of people out there that use computers to do digital art. And if you're doing digital art, disconnecting the screen so that you can draw on it is a lot easier.
Yeah.
We're still on design, right?
Yeah, I was about to move us forward, but if you want to toss in one more thing.
Just want to say one last thing. I think one of the other things that has always kept me sort of, not always, but like recently kept me in the MacBook Pro world is the trackpad.
Yeah.
I have yet to encounter a Windows laptop. I know that there's been strides, especially with Surface devices over the last couple of years. I just haven't found one that has a trackpad that's as good as what Apple's doing with the MacBook Pro and the MacBook Air.
Are there any that are as large? Because that's a big thing for me, is the size of the trackpad.
Everyone freaked out when they first revealed the MacBook Pro because it was so big, because they were worried about like false touches, but that's not a thing. It doesn't happen. It's fluid. It's great. even the fact that it doesn't click doesn't matter. Like that haptic touch, I never thought I'd say this, but it's better than a physical click.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, I'm sure the Surface ones are fine, but are they as big? Have they been upped in any way on the Surface 3s?
The Surface ones have definitely gotten bigger, but I don't think they're as big as the MacBook ones.
They're close. They're getting they're not quite. But it wasn't even just like the size for me. It just, the Pro one feels so, the Pro and the Air, the trackpad feels so smooth. There's just something that Apple does. Like, it's one of those instances where it's almost like that Apple secret sauce. There's something that they're doing that makes it feel better, significantly better than any Windows laptop, including the Surface. And I think that's also part of what has kept me using MacBooks.
Three times throughout this quarantine so far, I've put an Apple Magic Trackpad into my cart and said, I don't need this, and put it out of my cart, but I want one.
I have one.
Do you use it?
Like an external one, right?
Yeah.
I have one, and I was using it with the new iPad Pro, the 2020, because the keyboard with the trackpad, the Magic Keyboard, wasn't out yet. So I used it for the review to check out the new mouse and trackpad support. It's cool, but a mouse is better.
You think so?
If I'm using it at a desk, I just want to use a mouse.
I just love like the gestures that trackpads allow for.
That's what I was going to say. I would almost like to have a touchpad connected to my desktop, if only to have like just off to the side so I can like do gestures on it if I need to switch virtual desktops or something like
that. Maybe I'll try that. Yeah. I never thought about using both.
Let us know how it goes.
Have like this Matrix power setup.
Yeah. Connected to your like shirt so you can just like reach up and just like dust off your shoulder to like switch.
I've definitely seen people with setups like that where they have it like they have the trackpad on the left side so they can reach over with their left hand and like do a swipe gesture if they need to, and they've still got the mouse set up as well.
I'm doing that right after we're done this podcast.
Yeah, that sounds super cool. All right, let's move on though to software design. So this is somewhere where things actually do get a lot different, because the hardware, you know, aluminum machines are aluminum machines, but software is what you interact with when you're using them. Windows has like a very strong Metro design that's sort of come into its own in the last few years. And to me, Apple seems to be losing things, or not losing things, but it's getting old. It's not as fresh as I used to find it. So I'd like to hear thoughts on software design.
Metro is dead.
Sorry.
Where I'll start there. What's the design language? Fluent, but it's like Metro is still kind of there. I don't know.
Yeah, Fluent looks like Metro, right? Like it kind of does. Like I'm not crazy for getting that confused.
It does and it doesn't. And honestly, I think the best way to kind of sum that confusion up is Windows 10. That's what Windows 10 is. Windows 10 is like 3 or 4 different operating system designs from the last 20 years mashed together into something that's mostly functional.
Mm-hmm.
I would just say that like from a software perspective, sure, macOS, you know, might not have been, you know, received any fresh coats of paint recently. You know, it's kind of dated in its look, but you know, Microsoft kind of has this cobbled together software ecosystem on Windows where you have like a modern looking apps with their new Fluent design, and then you have some apps that are still very heavily Metro inspired, which was their Windows 8 design. And then you have a lot of stuff that's also Windows 7, basically, with maybe a little bit of Fluent mixed in, like the File Explorer. The File Explorer in Windows 10 is basically the File Explorer in Windows 7.
Which is good and bad for which like is good ease and bad, of use.
Right?
Do you think it would ever get changed?
Maybe.
Yeah, that'd be crazy.
I think they hinted. There was like a design video that dropped that was like, you know, a couple months ago, of just a quick snippet look of some things that are Fluent design in Microsoft that they're working on. And one of them was a Fluent design in File Explorer, and it looked really nice. But the big thing is it going to be as functional? Because the File Explorer right now, yeah, it's not the prettiest, but it's super, super functional.
Yeah, very true.
So yeah, that would be my gripe with Windows, is everything more or less works, but it really feels cobbled together. And depending on what you're doing, you can jump through, you know, all the way from 2020 Windows 10 back to like 1990s Windows, depending on how deep into the OS you're willing
to go. You have to go pretty deep to get into the 90s. Because I think on the flip side of that is, yeah, that can happen. But on the other instances, sometimes you can just use all new apps and new services and new websites, and it looks like super clean and fresh, and you hit the Windows key and pop open the search bar. And like, there are times where it looks really cool. Yeah, Pat?
One of the things I was going to say is like watching my mom use a Windows 10 laptop that has a touch screen was a really eye-opening experience for me, because she uses that laptop totally different than I have ever used Windows 10. Like, she's using pretty much exclusively touch to navigate everything. So I know that there's this perspective where like it seems like it's in some ways various eras of Windows kind of like duct taped together to try to create this cohesive ecosystem, but then when I think about it, like, in a way, that's an advantage because you can use it how you want to use it. Like, I'm sure John doesn't use touch controls at all with Windows, right? Like, he uses a mouse and keyboard primarily. Whereas, like I just said, like someone like my mom, who still amazes me given her age that she was able to like pick that up so quickly. But that's how she uses Windows, is with the touch controls and the different tiles and stuff like that.
In the touchscreen, like touchscreen tablet mode. I think it's called tablet mode.
Wow. She uses it pretty much exclusively in tablet mode, but it's like she doesn't have a great laptop. It's like an older Acer with a touchscreen, one of the first generation Windows 10 touchscreen laptops. And she has a trackpad and a mouse, obviously, but she primarily interacts with it through touch controls.
Fair enough.
Yeah. I don't remember when or why I had this conversation, but I recall having a conversation with some Microsoft people about that. And that was one of the things they kind of talked about, is that, you know, having the touch aspect is really important to them because it's a whole new way for people to interact with. And touch as a way of interacting with technology is a lot more kind of intimate or personal or just kind of like natural. It's really easy to just pick something up and start touching it, compared to interacting with it through a different device like a mouse or a keyboard.
Well, I think that's kind of why we were all going off about the trackpad, right? For the same reasons. It's just sometimes that tactile interaction, those gestures, those pinch to zoom, those types of things feel so natural when you touch something.
To Microsoft's credit, too, like, you're starting to see Apple go down that route, not with Mac OS, but with iPad OS, right? Mm-hmm. Like adding the trackpad and mouse support. I think over the next year, you're going to see apps being redesigned to work with touch displays, to work with touch controls, but also mouse and keyboard, which in some ways is what Windows apps, like, they've kind of adopted that sort of universal input method as well.
Yeah, Windows definitely got the jump on Apple in this one, I think.
Yep.
In terms of software design, though, Pat, how do you feel about Apple? I know when we were talking earlier, you were saying you kind of like the familiarity of it because it hasn't changed very much in a long time.
Yeah, I think whenever I use a Windows device, like I we talked about this before we started recording, but like I wasn't always a Mac OS user. Like, I only switched to using Mac OS as my primary operating system in probably like 2013, 2014, something like that. And there was a time where I still did Surface reviews at Mobile Syrup and my previous job, so I would switch between the two operating systems pretty fluidly. And I think for me, one of the things with Windows is things would change. Like, there'd be a setting and I would know where to access it, and then a new version or a new update, a significant update would drop, and then it would be harder to find that particular feature, or it would be located in a different way or buried or whatever. With Mac OS, I know there haven't been significant like visual revamps. I do agree with you that it's starting to look a little dated. But on the flip side, I think that's also an advantage, because anyone that's used Mac OS probably over the last 10 years, everything is still where it used to be, if that makes sense. You're still able to quickly access whatever settings you need. So in a sense, I see that as an advantage. And I do think that Apple has added interesting new features to Mac OS. Like, there's stuff like with Catalina, they got rid of iTunes, which has been a dumpster fire for quite some time. It's unfortunate that iTunes still exists on Windows devices. They added new apps. Like, there's an independent music app. There's a video app. There's things that they've changed. Like, they added improved Siri controls, things like that. And then I guess the biggest thing with Catalina, and in a way, I saw this kind of as a negative. They switched, they're dropping support for 32-bit applications. So there's several older Mac apps that either developers aren't supporting, they no longer work on the operating system. Mm-hmm. So they've made good changes. They've added new apps. They've made bad changes. There is stuff going on, but I think it's pretty difficult. Like, you can't deny that macOS hasn't become an afterthought for Apple. Like, their sales are in the iPhone. Their sales are in the iPad. They're really concentrating on iPad. Yeah, the AirPods. iPad OS and iOS. Like, that's their focus. Mac OS over the last 5 years has really, like, taken a backseat. I think at WWDC last year, we saw them kind of, like, pick up the mantle and realize that people, especially creatives who use Mac OS, still really care about the operating system and still use it. So I'm hoping that we see kind of like a fresh coat of paint this year at WWDC, but I'm not counting on it. Like, Apple still cares about it, but they also don't at the same time. It's not the money maker. It's not the growth driver anymore.
It might not be the future. The future could very well be iPad OS. I mean, it'd be crazy, and that's a long way off. But
that's what Apple wants the future to be, is iPad OS. I don't think it's there. I don't think it's ever going to be there. I just,
on like a purely subjective level, and this is to both you guys and me as well, but like, when you see, you know, marketing material for the latest MacBook or the latest Surface or Windows device, or you look over your shoulder and or John's shoulder and you see him at work running on Windows, and you're like, that looks pretty slick, whatever he's got. Like, on just a subjective level, when you see one compared to the other, do you have like a design you like more? Because, you know, they both have sort of different design languages. I wouldn't know what to call Apple's anymore, but, you know, we've taken Fluent as Microsoft's.
I think
millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Surface devices look cool. We've always thought that. I thought when Microsoft first launched the Surface line, it was like a pretty, in a way, like a brave thing for them mm-hmm. to do. It was mm-hmm. out there. It wasn't something we've ever seen. Even when the Surface laptop first launched and they only had the Alcantara version.
Yeah.
That was pretty controversial. I thought that the Alcantara looked really cool and that it was durable. Turns out I was wrong. It does get dirty pretty easy. It is possible to clean it, but you're still going to get those stains.
Still looks cool, though.
It still looks really cool. I think it was super unique. I honestly really think that what Microsoft's doing with the Surface line is pushing PC manufacturers to kind of up their game, up their laptop design game.
Yeah.
And I think it's really helped close that gap with Apple and the industrial design that they've had for a decade at this point. Without the Surface line, that never would have happened. Do I think PC laptops, Windows 10 laptops have surpassed Apple? No, they might soon. They're definitely getting there, though.
I think there is a coolness factor. Something that, as you guys have been saying your pieces, that keeps going through my head is, like, if I saw someone with a Surface and I didn't know what it was, I'd be more likely to, like, hey, like, what kind of laptop is that? That looks really cool. That, like, has a really unique design. That black color is very deep. Like, you know, very interesting, as opposed to an Apple device where it's like, I know what it is. I can see it from a distance. And maybe that's good or bad. I don't know, you know?
The one thing I'll say is I hate the look of the Surface Book. I really don't like it. And I hate the hinge, the way the hinge has that like space. I think they really need to change that. It was cool when it first launched because it was different and something we haven't seen before. But like, it's been a couple of years. They gotta change it. I think universally, it's not that popular.
You're against it too, John?
I would say that I think across the board, my main gripe with Surface is that Microsoft hasn't really changed things up since these products were introduced. Like, we're on the third generation of the Surface Book, and it's like visually identical to the first one, right?
Yeah.
How many Surface Pros have come out? How many Surface laptops have come out now? And they're all more or less look the same. And
it's very Apple-like in a way.
It is very Apple-like. And, you know, it's not that big an issue because the designs are frankly really good. Like the Surface laptop is one of the best designed laptops on the market right now. It's fantastic. So yeah, it would be nice, but like also Microsoft doesn't really need to change anything because I've already got a really, really great hardware product. I wouldn't extend that so much to the Surface Book. I can't really speak too much about, you know, the hinge and stuff like that because I haven't gone hands-on with one yet, but just from like an opinion, like looking at it, I'm like, I don't really see how that hinge is going to be super useful compared to like a normal laptop hinge. I don't, you know, the Book to me kind of looks like the more dated of the Microsoft products. And the Surface Pro 7, I think if the Surface Pro 7 looked like the Surface Pro X, I would be a lot happier because the Surface
that
Pro
would be
X
sick. Yeah, I agree.
Is so nice. It's such a nice piece of hardware and it's still unmistakably totally. Surface, but it's, you know, newer and more modern and smaller bezels and thinner and nicer.
It's more rounded, which kind of seems like an evolution of the design, which is nice to see.
Yeah.
Back to the hinge. I kind of like it. I don't know. When it's open, I think it looks really cool having that one like full piece that just goes from flat to up. No like break.
You're
just
wrong. It looks stupid.
Like I said, I can't speak to it because I haven't played around with any of the Surface Books recently.
No,
I
get what you're saying, Brad. Like I get it. Have you used one though?
I had one for a little bit. Remember Igor used to have one and I had that one for maybe a week.
Okay. Fair enough.
So when it's closed, it's stressful because you're like, what's going in there?
I just have, yeah, exactly. Like I have these visions of, and I talk about this all the time. I have these visions of like dust and debris getting inside it and then just scraping and scratching the screen. Like that's already an issue with MacBooks and pretty much any laptop.
Yeah.
If you're putting them in a bag that has heavy stuff, like the keys are going to get pressed into the screen unless you put something in between it or have a screen protector on your MacBook, which is something I just bought for mine and installed, which is crazy that I have a screen protector on a laptop. I know.
Yeah, but it's improved sleep by hours. So.
Oh, it has. I sleep so much better now. You're 100% right. That's why I don't look tired. See, these bags are gone.
Yeah. You look like 10 years younger.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. But no, I know what you mean. Like, yeah, it's stress inducing. And the MacBook that I have at the moment has super bad key indentations because I wasn't really aware of this for the longest time. And so I just have to live with it now. And in any kind of glare, it looks terrible.
I'm glad to have ruined your life by letting you know of this issue.
Thanks.
Yeah. I think every MacBook that I've ever looked at has had some level of key indentation on the screen. So
yeah,
you guys are not alone in that.
You want to know the only hardware that I've ever used that doesn't have that issue? It's the Pixelbook. The original Pixelbook has like this little rubber thing kind of on the handrest that flank the trackpad. And that leaves this tiny, tiny space that I don't think is enough for debris or sand or whatever to get in there. But if you put that laptop in a backpack and you have weight on it, it's not gonna squish.
The keys don't depress.
I wish every manufacturer did that. And I don't understand why. I don't know. It's always baffled me why this isn't something that other people complain about. It always just feels like it's a Patrick thing. I don't get it.
I don't think I've had any issues like that with the Surface laptops either, at least not that I recall.
When you close them, what does it look like?
Well, with the Surface Book, there's about a 3-inch gap in one corner.
Well, yeah, yeah.
I know. I'm kidding.
With the Book, but I mean, like with the Pro and the laptop, is there a space?
I don't think so.
Okay, interesting.
It could be different. So the metal ones have a bit of an indentation on the keyboard, so the keys sit lower, but I think the keys are still flush with the rest of the palm rest.
Okay.
The Alcantara one, I think, would have a little bit more of a difference in height. But either way, like when I had the Surface Laptop 3, the 15-inch one to review, I don't recall having any issues with getting the screen all keyboard indentated or whatever the proper phrasing of that is.
I think we just coined it as keyboard indentated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. I guess sort of the last thing, and I think this will probably be the last thing that we compare, but smartphone compatibility has kind of changed a lot in terms of Windows for sure. I mean, Mac has always kind of had it and it's always been sort of one of the secret things that if you have a Mac and an iPhone, you get all these extra features. But now if you have an Android phone and a Windows device, you also get a lot of extra features. So I think that's worth comparing because a lot of people don't know. Go first, John.
I can jump in on this one. Basically, what I would say is that Microsoft has put in a lot of work into kind of opening up and connecting Windows with other things. And, you know, there's a couple of reasons why. I would say that probably the biggest initiative for Microsoft is that they have eventually the Surface Duo coming out, which is going to be a Microsoft device running Android. So there's a little bit of incentive there. But basically, Microsoft has this Your Phone platform that makes it super easy to connect your Android device with your Windows PC. If you have a Samsung device, there's even more options, but basically it supports sending text messages, phone calls, sharing files and images between the devices. I think with the Samsungs, you can also copy and paste between them. And most of this is available on any Android device. And some of it is still exclusive to Samsung, but will eventually make its way to other Android devices. And it's all free. All you have to do is install the Your Phone app on your Android phone from the Play Store. And if you have a Windows 10 PC, you probably already have Your Phone on it. In fact, when you first set up most Windows 10 PCs, they say, do you want to connect your phone? And you can actually text a link to download Your Phone to your phone from your PC.
Yeah, I think I scanned a QR code.
Yeah. So there's a couple ways to do it. It's a really, really handy app if you want to have access to pretty much your entire phone on your desktop. Now, there's very limited, if there is any support at all for iPhone through Microsoft's Your Phone platform. I think all it lets you do at the moment is copy links from your iPhone to your desktop. Like
that's all you need.
Pivotal.
But there are other platforms, and that's the nice thing about Windows and Android and stuff like that, is there's so many different options. So I know Dell has one, I think they call it Mobile Connect, that you can get, and it does a lot of the same stuff as your phone, but it also works really well with iPhones. And if you get the Mobile Connect app on your iPhone, I think you can do screen mirroring, so you can basically mirror what's on your iPhone on your Dell PC. So there's a lot of different options out there, but I would say that PC or Windows to mobile phone connections have gotten a lot better in recent years.
We've come a long way from using like the push bullet Chrome extension.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And then yeah, Pat, I mean, you've rebuttal. Everybody knows the Mac and iPhone is the dynamic duo. What do you have to say?
There's like no integration. I think they're
not speaking to each other currently. They're in a fight.
They're separated but not divorced. I think the like key thing would be cutting and pasting. Like that's cool. I use it all the time for the work that we do, whether it's like socialing stories or cutting and pasting an Instagram caption that I want to post on Twitter, things like that. Like that's really useful. There's handoff, which I don't really use because I don't use Safari. I kind of use Mac devices a little different than a lot of people, where I like Mac hardware, but I don't really use Apple software. I mostly use Google software. So like Gmail, Chrome, I know I need to not use Chrome. I need to read John's guide. I got to switch to Firefox or one of the other lesser known browsers. I'm going to do it someday. I swear. I keep saying it, but I'm going to do it at some point. So I don't really use handoff. I could see that being useful if I did, but I don't. And then the other thing is the messages app, which I would say that I absolutely hate for a couple of reasons. I don't want to receive phone calls or text messages on my computer. I usually have my phone in front of me, so I'm fine with them just coming through my phone. In fact, when we were recording this, I actually had a call come randomly through from my allergy clinic that I had to cancel. Like I don't need that to happen. And that was because I forgot to close the messages app and I need to change the settings so that it doesn't open every time I restart my MacBook. But even just apart from the fact that it's annoying, I've never, and this is since I've started using a Mac device from the very first time, I've never been able to get messages, to sync properly with my phone. So I see all of the messages, like every conversation I've ever had through text, through the messages app is there, but the contacts, like the actual names of the contacts aren't, it's just phone numbers. And I don't know why. And if you Google this, it's like a common issue. that Apple's never really addressed. They just say like, resync it. I've done it a million times. It never syncs. Sometimes the names will appear if it's like a new conversation, like a group chat or something like that. But like a contact I've had in my phone forever, like my mom or something like that, that doesn't show up. It just is a number.
That's not a huge issue,
but like it makes me not want to use it. But also just inherently, I don't want to respond to texts on my computer. I can just do it on my phone. I'd rather keep things separate.
Yeah, I'd like to jump in there and just say that I 100% agree. I don't actually use the Windows Your Phone app at all. I've never wanted to have text messages on my computer. It's just not interested me. I've tried it.
You guys are crazy. But
I don't like it. Enlighten us, Bennett. Tell us.
You're just more popular than us. You have like your friends texting you all over the place. You got to respond to them quickly.
I wish I could get my Snapchats on PC. Let me tell you. No.
Oh my goodness.
No, I don't know why you guys don't like this. Like I used to have the Mac iPhone set up and I used to use messages. I have had issues with contacts syncing over, particularly like when Alex and I met, like getting her contact from my iPhone to my Mac was like, I had to just make two contacts. It was weird.
Yeah, I am not doing that. There's no way.
Yeah, for me it was easier because all my old stuff is there, but the new people I have to make new ones for.
Yeah, so
it's a step by step, but it's still, yeah, that syncing issue is something. But even on Windows, like I like when I get to my PC and I just sit down and I sort of can replace whatever I would use with my pocket PC and my phone with the PC in front of me or the computer in front of me. So like, I want my text to come here. I want my notifications to come here. I want my emails to come here. If I could get something that would be like, I know your phone is right beside your PC. I'm not going to put any notifications to it right now because all your notifications you're getting on PC. I would love that. Because like, I don't want to miss things, but I don't want to be using more than one device to accomplish the tasks that I need to do. Because they're both just computers at the end of the day. One is just a phone size, you know, like. Maybe that's...
Is that I cannot crazy? Relate.
No, hey, that didn't switch you're you at crazy. All. I thought I was really going on a tear there.
No, you have not convinced me.
I get what you're saying. I understand where you're coming from. I don't agree. Maybe it's because I like to use my PC for gaming, right? And then, you know, if I have it connected to my phone and somebody starts texting me, I'm getting text messages popping up while I'm playing a game. I'm like, no, I don't want that. I don't want to respond to you right now. I'm busy.
Right? That's Cortana. How you don't finish in the top five in Apex.
Yeah.
The Microsoft Focus Assist or whatever it's called.
Yeah. Well, that's a factor as well. So that's less of an issue now. But like, it's just, you know, my point is that if I'm using my PC, I'm like, trying to do something and trying to be productive, and I don't want to be distracted by notifications from so and so texting me.
100%.
Wow, that is enlightening. I'm gonna need to ask more people if they like phone integration with their PCs or not, because I thought everybody would be all for it. This is surprising to me. But yeah, I think that's more or less it. I mean, do you guys have any closing notes? Have you been swayed at all? Do you think that there's an operating system for, you know, for everyone?
I mean, the only thing we didn't really touch on that much, and I think this is a whole can of worms that we don't really have time to get into, but is like the hardware side of things, where like the MacBook Air, for instance, the new one features Intel's 10th generation processor, but it's the Y series, which is the lower powered one, whereas the Surface Pro, sorry,
the Surface Laptop 3.
This is so many devices, so confusing. The Surface Laptop 3 features the U series, which is more powerful, right? So in a sense, you're getting a more powerful device. You're getting more bang for your buck. I think that's something to consider. I'm currently reviewing, like I already reviewed the 13-inch MacBook Pro. I liked it. It had some shortcomings. We've talked about that. Currently reviewing the MacBook Air. It'll likely be on the site by the time this podcast is published. But that's one of my issues with it is I can't help but wish Apple opted for the U series, because it would be the ultimate laptop. Like, I get it from a marketing perspective. They're leaving that for the Pro. That's why the Pro exists. They would argue that like they're doing, this is more than enough power for MacBook Air users. And like, in a way they're 100% right. But I just can't help but wish they went that U series route with this laptop. It would be near perfect for me if they did, and they didn't.
So my question on that would be, and I don't know how much you'll be able to speak to this, but what kind of overhead is involved in running macOS? Like, I know if you're running Windows, you typically need some pretty decent hardware for it to run moderately well. Like, most lower end Windows devices really don't run well, because Windows just kind of has a lot of overhead in terms of running it on a platform. So I don't know if macOS is a little bit slimmer, a little bit more toned down, and can run on lower hardware, but
I don't know a ton about that, but I know that in general, like, the thing with Apple's devices is that there's this cohesive union between the hardware and the software. So on the Apple side of things, like, we always see stuff in the comments section where it's like, oh, this phone only has 4 gigs of RAM, it's a piece of crap, you should never buy it. When in reality, that doesn't matter, because iOS is optimized to run on that one hardware configuration, so it's not an issue. Mm-hmm. So my guess would be that it's the same thing with macOS, where it requires less hardware. I think, in a sense, this issue that I'm talking about with the U series, Y series, it's not exclusive to me, but it's a bit of a unique use case where, again, I don't use Apple's software like Final Cut and stuff like that. That has all been optimized for its own devices. I use Audition. I use all the Adobe Suite stuff. I use Premiere. I use Lightroom. And Adobe is notorious for not optimizing its software for Apple's devices in a way that truly takes advantage of them, in the same sense as Apple does with its apps. So I always feel like, I feel like some of the issues that I've had with the Air, where if I connect it to my 4K external monitor and I'm trying to run Lightroom on one screen, Photoshop on the other, maybe I'm editing this podcast with Audition, I can do that, but I encounter lag. I feel like if I were to use Apple's apps and relearn my workflow, that wouldn't happen. But I don't feel like I should have to do that. And if I did have the U-series processor in the Air, it would be able to do those things. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I get that.
One thing to more address the overhead question, and I don't know if this is sort of the perfect example, but I did have the MacBook for a while, right? And like, I did use that, and it was the M5, so that's kind of like a Y series i5 from years before. So there was a little more power involved, but generally I was able to get through the day to day on like a pretty good basis, you know, like running through the operating system was pretty good. I don't know how, I don't have a Windows exact comparison, unfortunately, but
Yeah, and I can't say with certainty that that is the case. Like, the Surface Go 2 is coming out, and it's got a Core M3 8th gen processor in it, right? And I'm gonna go hands on with that soon, hopefully. It depends on FedEx.
They start you with a scaled down version of Windows? I think I remember seeing
they used to, but no, Windows, it's out of the box, full Windows on the Go 2.
Okay.
So it'll be, I'm interested to see how that works and how it performs. I have a bit of a hunch that Windows in and of itself will be okay, but I feel like it'll be, you know, I'll be better off using stuff like Microsoft's Edge browser compared to, you know, like Google Chrome or Firefox or something that might not be quite as optimized and stuff like that. So it'll be interesting to see, but yeah.
I wish I still had my MacBook to lend you to like compare or something. That might be interesting.
Yeah, that would be an interesting comparison indeed.
I still have one from the 2015, but that M series processor is so old that like it wouldn't be worth the comparison.
Yeah.
But yeah, all in all, I think unless anyone has the courage to definitively say that they believe one ecosystem is better than the other, are we done?
can't. Like, if you're a reasonable person, you really can't. There's like advantages and disadvantages that we've talked about over this podcast to each of them, right? Like, you'll have those people in the comment section that we see all the time on Mobile Syrup that cannot fathom why someone would use a PC, because things are so much simpler with a Mac. And then on the other side of the spectrum, you'll have the same thing with Mac, where like, you're an idiot because you shelled out too much money for this laptop that you could get from Dell for a fraction of the cost with the same configuration. It's like, it depends on what you want to use it for. It depends on what you value in an operating system. It depends on what you care about in terms of hardware. It's two different worlds that have strengths and weaknesses.
All right, yeah. Patrick did not have the courage to say it. John, do you have the courage to say it?
Everybody knows that Linux is the superior operating system, and that's what we should all be running.
Damn.
Honestly, you can't definitively say one is better than the other. It really, really does come down to what you want to do and what you want to use, right? Like for me, I love playing games on my computer, and I've used Windows for such a long time that I just love, or well, love is maybe a strong word, but I know how well it works, and I can just use it, and I don't really have to think about it, right?
Mm-hmm.
If
you game, why would you buy a Mac? Like it just makes no sense.
I could switch over and use a Mac, but a Mac would never replace my desktop setup, so I'd still be using Windows on my desktop, and I'd be using, you know, Mac OS for my laptop, but I really only use my laptop for work. So it's like, to me, it's just, you know, it's easier to use Windows on everything because that's the operating system that I use primarily for, you know, my personal life. So it's easier to just adapt it for work as well.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a struggle. I mean, I'm kind of in the middle of it right now. You know, that's partly why I kind of wanted to do this, as basically I have a Windows desktop that I use for work currently because I'm working from home and that's my home computer. But I also have a MacBook Pro that I have been using for work for the past year, if not a little longer. But it's aging. It's getting old. It's getting slow. And yeah, I just every day I seem to be coming up with a new answer for what I want. And, you know, it's so hard to pin down why you would want to go with one operating system over the other. You know, it's an endless debate. I thought maybe you guys would be able to solve this. Maybe I need Linux. John said it.
We can't help you.
Yeah.
Nobody can help you. I'm going on your lost cause quest, going into the desert.
Do we want to wrap this up and hit the games that we've been playing?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, let's do it.
You can pretty much go first, Pat. I just played Apex Season 5 a little bit, so.
Yeah, that's all I've been doing. Been playing Apex Season 5. I really like the new character, Loba?
Yep.
Great, got the name right. I think her abilities are super cool. I think she adds, like, the loot finding stuff adds a new element to the game. The changes to King's Canyon are awesome. I think the weapon balancing is excellent. There's so many things that I really like in this update, and I think that Respawn has handled Apex in an extremely, extremely impressive way. Like, I haven't seen a developer be able to pretty much universally keep its audience happy, with the only exception this time being people that play as Pathfinder are mad that his cooldown has been increased, so you can no longer, like, fly across the map on ziplines every 5 seconds.
Yeah, I think Loba has the same cooldown. Like, I think they're both 35 seconds for their, like,
yeah,
quick lead transport ability, I guess.
I really like the game. I think it's the best battle royale. Fortnite sucks. Warzone's horrible. What's the other big one?
PUBG.
Who even plays PUBG?
Battle Royale.
That game doesn't even have colors.
I don't know if anybody.
That's the real battle royale.
I don't know if anybody read about PUBG on Stadia on The Verge the other day.
Oh yeah, it's empty and you just play bots.
Yeah, that's so sad.
So sad.
Yeah.
Yeah, so other than that, I've been playing. I actually recently set up my aging desktop, which was pretty timely because we're talking about Windows. Updated it, got all the new graphics card drivers, all that fun stuff, so I could play Oculus Rift games again. I covered a lot of VR stuff for Mobile Syrup 4 years ago, which blows my mind that it was 4 years ago. I only know this because when I go into the Oculus store, any game that I installed back then, it tells you how long ago you had it installed on your computer. Absolutely insane. Time does not stop moving forward. And I've had fun with it. It's interesting. I've hurt myself a few times. I've punched a wall by accident because it's rim scale VR, right? I have all of the older headsets, the PlayStation VR, the Oculus Rift, and the Vive, and I opted for the Oculus because it's the most comfortable, and you can kind of create a room scale setup with three cameras in a smaller space than you would for the Vive. The Vive needs a little bit more room. I've mostly been playing a game called Super Hot, where it's like you're kind of like Neo in the Matrix in a sense, and you're dodging bullets and shooting enemies, and it's very simple graphics, so it's able to run on my PC that could barely run this first gen of VR 4 years ago.
Oh my god, but I think it even run Crysis?
I'm on low settings, maybe sub HD.
Okay, continue.
But I think the thing that has really kind of, and it's bad in a way, is like I want to get back into VR now. Part of that's because like I can't go anywhere, so I can go places in VR at least. So I'm really thinking about picking up the Oculus Quest because you don't need cameras. It has room scale with cameras just built into the headset itself. So I really want to test that out. I know it has a mobile processor. It's not as powerful as one that's hooked up to a PC, but the more I read about it and the more I watch, that seems like the future of VR. Because I feel like if I didn't have to set up all this stuff and update all these drivers, I never would have dropped off VR. I would have kept playing every once in a while. Whereas all of that extra work meant that like I just want to play a game. I don't want to have to do all this extra stuff to get it up and running. So yeah, hopefully I'll get my hands on an Oculus Quest at some point in the future.
What are the chances that we like tune in next week or the next 2 weeks when we do this and your This Week in Gaming section is, well, I've been getting into VR and I just spent $2,000 on a graphics card so I can play Half-Life Alyx in 4K.
It's possible. I've been thinking about the Oculus Rift S at the same time because I'll just do this super quick. I have an Oculus Go and its display is higher resolution than the Rift, even though it has like no processing power, no room scale. Things look clearer on the Go. So when I use the Go and then switch to the Rift, it's like taking my glasses off in a sense.
Yeah.
And everything's much blurrier. So it really makes me wish that I could at least try an S or try the Quest to know for sure that it's going to look better with room scale. But that's just my like initial comparison that I didn't really notice before, because there was a little bit of space between when I was using the Rift and the Go.
Cool. And yeah, John, what have you been playing?
I've been playing two games. One of them I wrote about for Mobile Syrup recently. It was Factorio, and it sounds like pretty much the most boring game you could play, but it is insanely addictive. So basically the whole point is you're a dude crash land on an alien planet, got to build a factory to make a rocket to go home. But the core gameplay loop is that anything that you can do in the game, you can automate. So it pretty much turns into this giant management game of like building a factory and then managing it and stuff like that. It sounds super, super boring, but it's really cool because, you know, when you first start off, you're like mining resources and stuff like that. And you go, why am I mining this stuff by hand? I'm going to build a drill that'll do it for me. So then you build a drill and then you have way more resources and you're like, I don't know what to do with these. So then you build conveyor belts to ship the resources to be melted down into other resources that you can use. And it just keeps building and it's this endless loop. You know, you take your copper and then you refine it and then you turn it into copper wire and then you put those into circuit boards and then you need bigger, more advanced circuit boards. So then you have to expand your circuit board production to make newer, more advanced circuit boards. And it just keeps building on top of it and getting more and more complex. So it just sounds
so satisfying once you like get it all done.
It is. It's satisfying. It's super fun. It's like really kind of puzzle oriented as well. Cause like, you know, you build this massive thing to make something and then suddenly it stops producing that thing. And you're like, well, what happened? And then you have to spend, you know, hours troubleshooting. It's great. It's
Can I play it on Mac?
I think it's on Mac, but I'm not sure. It doesn't, okay. It's got like super old looking pixel graphics. So it's not super graphically intense. But depending on how crazy of a factor you get going, it can definitely slow things down. And then the other thing I've been playing is Warzone. I would agree with Pat that Apex is the best battle royale, but I just enjoy Warzone a little bit more personally with how I play battle royales. So I've been having some fun playing with that.
You guys on that?
You're
big,
wrong, and that game sucks.
Yeah, on that big Dwarf Fortress update. Did anybody see that?
There's a big Dwarf Fortress update.
I'll admit I never really played Dwarf Fortress. I just saw it once, thought it was cool when I was like 15, downloaded it. And as you know what Dwarf Fortress looks like, if you know, then you know that that's something that if you have no idea what you're doing, makes zero sense to you at all.
Oh, 100%.
Is this Minecraft?
So
no, it's, do you know Dwarf Fortress?
I have no idea what that game is.
You have to Google it. It's like, what, it's like ASCII or whatever. Like what's that like language?
ASCII, yeah. So it's like ASCII graphics. So when you look at it, it's like a bird's eye view
of like this map, but in like characters and symbols.
What the heck is this?
It's like staring into the Matrix, man. It's insane.
Why does it look like this?
I don't know. Figured it out.
Because the game is so like intense. It simulates everything. So I used to play Dwarf Fortress a fair bit, and the whole kind of point of the game is you have some dwarves, you're building a mountain fortress.
Yeah.
But it simulates everything. It simulates the dwarves getting food, it simulates them having relationships, it simulates them making art. So like I was like going through my fortress, and I had like a dwarf that was good at engraving stuff, so I told him to engrave everything in my fortress. So he was just going around for days, like chipping stone out of the walls and like designing art on the walls. And the whole reason I told him to do that was to artificially increase the value of my fortress so I would get more trade. Hilarious. And I could like go through and click individually on each wall tile and read a description of the artwork that he did. And it's like, not like there's a dragon on this wall. It's like detailed, like, this is a depiction of the year 1342, where the dwarf army of Ragnarok was fighting like three dragons from Mount Visnuvinus or something
like
that. This
game looks insane.
Like, it's absolutely nuts. It's insane.
I brought this up as a joke. I can't believe you played it. It looks crazy. I'd like to play it. Maybe with the new graphics I'll try, but that actually did happen. They did update the graphics. I don't know how much better it is, but I think it's more understandable now.
There were graphics packs that you could get that would turn the characters into like actual images and little like sprites and stuff like that. But
wild.
The weird thing is, at least that I found with it, is it would transform more than just the actual game, because the whole thing is ASCII. So the menus would, some of the menu characters that were ASCII as well would get turned into like random dwarves and stuff like that. So
that's funny.
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry for pulling that tangent. Let's do it.
All right. So thanks for listening to the Syrupcast. Be sure to drop us a 5-star review on iTunes. It really helps the show with our rankings. You can find me on Twitter at @Patrick_O'Rourke, and of course on mobilesyrup.com. Brad, where can people find you?
You can find me just about anywhere at the Brad Fad, and just like Pat, my work is on mobilesyrup.com. Oh, and I have some videos on YouTube.
Oh yeah, Brad. We should mention this. Brad did a fair amount. You did 2 videos recently, right?
Yeah.
So there's 2 videos. One that is a review of the OnePlus 8 series, and then another deep dive into Chrome OS that's on our YouTube channel. He's kind of taking over the YouTube channel and spearheading that video effort. So say some nice things in the comments section about his videos.
Oh, wow. That would be lovely.
And then John, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at John_Lamont. And that's John without an H. So JON_LAMONT. And also on the website, mobilesyrup.com.
And John's Surface stuff should be hitting the site probably next week.
Soon, I hope. It's really up to FedEx. It's not in my hands anymore.
FedEx is your new editor.
Yeah.
And as always, you can find all of our content at mobilesyrup.com and follow us on Twitter and Instagram at @mobilesyrup. Thanks for listening.
Your lighting has gotten a lot better this time, Pat. You're really glowing now. Did you bronze at all in between or something?
No, I'm just sweaty.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.